Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. I'm going to talk about the bump in the road that's going on right now as John Brennan moves his way towards confirmation as head of the CIA. You've got folks not happy with his policy on drones. I'm not thrilled with it either. We'll talk about that. Also, the minimum wage is back on the agenda. The right wing, not happy. Not happy at all, because you should work for free and we should be able to kick you to the curb whenever we want. Also, big elections in Los Angeles. The moneyed interests poured tons into the school board race and lost. So, you know what? There may just be hope after all. And the pesky ACLU's once again sticking their nose into police business. How dare they? If cops want to use sound cannons and shock cuffs and, well, any of the other crown control devices that we've dreamed up in Iraq, they should be able to. They want to use it on people like you. Who's the ACLU to stand in their way, right? I'm not so comfortable with the sound cannons and all that. Also, another... And it's like, you know, like Yogi Berra said, it's like deja vu all over again. Another J-1 visa worker scandal. And surprise, surprise, you know, one of America's iconic brands. You know, if it weren't for the, you know, I look at it, there's no gold for these workers under the golden arches. But I guess it depends on what golden arch we're talking about. Also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can also email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Today in history. And you know, I like to look back to the past to see where we're going and maybe learn some lessons from the past. Maybe how things were done. Because I go back to my grandparents' generation. The people who I really truly believe built this country into what it is today. A strong, economically strong, but a strong country because of its middle class. Not because of its elites. And how did you get there? And you look today back in 1930, you had hundreds of thousands of unemployed people in the streets throughout this country. You had 100,000 people in Union Square in New York saying, we want jobs. We want you to do things that are going to produce jobs that are, even if it is government as the employer of last resort, which is something I've advocated for years. But on this day, with hundreds of thousands of people in the streets in New York, while they were attacked by mounted police. A year ago today, thousands of people in New York City formed what they termed as the world's longest unemployment line. It stretched from Wall Street to Union Square. The same Union Square that, you know, what, 72 years earlier, 100,000 people said, we want jobs. The struggle never ends. But a year ago, they were holding pink slips over their heads. You know, saying, you know what, we stand in solidarity with the 14 million unemployed people at the time, and that number has gone up even higher. And I look at this and I go, you know, this is what we need to be doing. Which is why today we were out in the streets for two different worker actions. Again, this J-1 visa thing has reared its ugly head. If you remember, about a year and a half ago, we talked extensively on the program about what was going on at Hershey as they were bringing kids in from all around the world under the guise of a cultural exchange program, putting them to work in the warehouses, lifting boxes and working just obscene amounts of hours, and all of the conditions that went along with it, all of the living conditions, the exploitation, the thievery, all of it. You know, the putting them four in a room, charging them thousands of dollars a month for the room, charging them $15 for the privilege of having a card to punch in and out with, charging them for transportation, obscene amounts. And through sunlight, through activism, through these kids who come here from around the world because they want this cultural, they want to see America. They've been told for their entire lives that this is the place to emulate, that this is the greatest country on earth. And they want to experience that. So they scrape together thousands of dollars. And they come here to be exploited. And today was another one of those Hershey moments. Only this time it's a local chain of McDonald's. And there's a couple of them. The one we were at today is the one over in, I think it's Camp Hill or Hampton Township, 4230 Trindle Road. And I would say, I'll never go to that one again. Sorry, just not happening. Especially after this is just going to blow your mind when we get to this later on in the program. But here we are, back in this same situation with this J-1 visa program. These kids come from all around the world, Argentina, Brazil, Malaysia, students from around the world. They want to know, they want to see the America up front. They want that cultural exchange. They want to be able to come here and learn English a little bit better. And I think back to my wife, who was in Toledo, Spain, with a similar cultural exchange. It was a little bit longer, but same idea. She wasn't put into a sweatshop. She was able to actually travel and see the country and experience the people and learn the language better. That's why they came here. This is going to be their country's next generation of diplomats and business people who they want that experience. And an experience that a lot of our politicians I look at George W. Bush, never really out of the country. Didn't know anything about the rest of the world. And yet he's going to be our leader. So the story today it just blows my mind because I have patronized that McDonald's there at 4230 Trindle Road. I have been in the, and I'll be honest, I would go through the drive through or I would go in and I would see these kids, from, you know, all over the world. And, you know, silly me, even after coming off the Hershey thing, silly me thinking, well, you know, this is probably the owner, the guy who owns it is bringing some family members over, and, you know, it just is what it is. And now you find out it's all part of this J-1 visa program, which, you know, I thought last year, hey, we've put some controls back. It can't happen anymore. There's somebody watching. And the reality is there's not, because we've privatized that. It's more privatization of government function. It's more, oh, the industry will police itself. So now put yourself in this situation. We're going to talk to one of these workers a little bit later in the program, but it just blows my mind. Put yourself in this situation. You're going to go to another country thinking, hey, I'm going to get this experience. I'm going to be able to make a little bit of money. So that I can travel and I can see and experience, you know, what it's like to live in this other country. You get there, they put you into a basement with eight other people and charge you $300 a month with eight other people in this basement. No sunlight, nothing. And you're basically sequestered there. No transportation. You're in a residential neighborhood with nowhere to go. And you walk, you know, several blocks to the McDonald's and back, and that's your cultural exchange. And I would argue, as I had with some of the people there, that, you know, they're experiencing what low-wage Americans put up with every day. This is really a cultural exchange of what it is to be a low-wage worker in this country, and they're getting a PhD in that. But that's not what they were sold. They weren't told, well, you're going to go sleep in a basement somewhere with eight other people, and the only thing that separates the boys from the girls is a curtain. And oh, by the way, the manager, the boss, he's going to be living upstairs in the big house. And I'm going, wait a second, there is so much here. The company town never left us. It just moved to the suburbs. Because as I'm walking around this neighborhood, and it's over on Maple Street, you know, right there near Trindle Road, as I'm looking through the neighborhood, this is a neighborhood that I would live in, a neighborhood that you, anybody, who would know that that's going on right in a solidly middle-class, working-class neighborhood? Who would have thought it? And it took me back to when I lived out in Allentown, out in Easton Way. The people that lived next door to me, and I wonder now, I'm thinking back to it, you know, they were a Vietnamese family. And there were like 15 of them that lived in this house. And there's part of me that's going back, you know, was this what it was? Because they all worked for the same company. And they all shuttled back and forth to that same company, and they lived in the house in shifts, all three shifts. Is that what that was then? And I'll tell you what really, and this is what's amazing to me, just absolutely, just the courage of these kids to stand up and to say enough's enough just blows me away. The courage to be in a foreign country where you're barely a, you're fairly fluent in the language, but not as proficient as you would want. You're here, you're broke, because and your family doesn't have the money. The kids I talk to, they come from working class backgrounds. And what the boss is telling you is, if you do anything, we're going to call immigration. We're going to call the people in the program and have you shipped out of here, and you're going to lose your money, and you're going to lose your cultural exchange. And all that money you put into it, gone. Poof. Up in smoke. So you've now given these people this kind of power over these kids. And there's part of me, as I was talking to the one girl, who's thinking, you know, you could have just done your last month. You could have just said, you know what, I'll put up with a bad experience, and I'm getting out of Dodge, and I'm never looking back, and the heck with everybody else. But then she said to me, she goes, well, what about me, the next me? And I'm going, you know, that is just thinking that no longer American thought. And I was looking at these kids going, man, you know, they are fighting not for themselves, but so that no one else like them ever has to go through this. And oh, by the way, they're fighting for better conditions for the people that are working there that live here, for the low-wage worker. And as this whole event went on, and it was just remarkable to see all of these kids standing in solidarity and standing together and saying, you know what, we're not afraid of you. You can't bully us anymore. And I wish more Americans would do that, as we have in the past. And say, you know what, we're not going to allow our economy to be co-opted, and we're not going to allow the fruits of our labor stolen from us. You know, another person told me the story, and there's nine of them that live in the basement of this house. As I said, the manager lives upstairs and keeps tabs on them, keeps an eye on them, make sure they don't leave. And when someone doesn't show up to work or they need more workers over, they rouse them up and send them off. So it's like having a constant at-will workforce right there. Just-in-time workers. How American is that? And if you don't play along with the game, they cut your hours back, and then you don't make enough money to pay the rent, and then, well, you're homeless. And they got no problem telling you, we'll just kick you to the curb. Which is exactly what they tried to do after these kids stood together and said no more. Which to me is absolutely criminal. And they had the police there with the lights going. I mean, imagine how frightening that must be coming from some of these countries around the world. Imagine that. Just think for a second. And you know what? I go back to this, and I try to put myself in these situations. I try to put my kids in these situations. How would we react to being just outwardly exploited and abused? Is that something we're willing to? And as the cars were driving in and out of the lot, and some of the people who weren't involved in the action today, I had an opportunity to talk to, I was amazed and astounded at the apathy that some folks have in this country. It just absolutely blows my mind. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to follow up on this, a little bit more on this, and the other job action that went on. Quick break, right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Bills to raise the minimum wage have been introduced in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says Senator Tom Harkin and Representative George Miller have taken a stand for millions of struggling families by introducing the bills. Henry says anyone with a job should not have to live in poverty. Henry says raising the minimum wage is a good thing for the economy because it puts more money in the pockets of people who will spend it. She called on the Senate and the House to pass the bills raising the minimum wage from the current $7.25 an hour to $10.10 an hour. A sizable chunk of the sequester cuts come from keeping the country safe. Jesse Russell reports.
President Barack Obama has begun reaching out to a new group of Republicans in an effort to fix the drastic cuts that went into effect this week due to the sequester. Senator Susan Collins, Bob Corker, and Rob Portman have been contacted by the president in an effort to break a logjam that's been created by Republican leadership in Congress. Meanwhile, the impact of the cuts are starting to be felt throughout the country. Some of the cuts include $57 million to help reduce health care fraud and abuse, $125 million from wildlife fire management, $928 million from disaster relief, and $633 million from special education programs. Some of the biggest cuts come from areas that ensure the nation's security. Perhaps most strikingly, in light of the controversy surrounding Benghazi, is the $79 million that has been slashed from embassy security around the globe. In addition, the cuts also include $549 million from border protection and $604 million from the National Nuclear Security Administration.
The AFL-CIO and Change to Win labor federations have filed amicus briefs challenging laws that ban gay marriage. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says that we're a nation built on the belief of equality for all, and laws banning marriage equality for gays deny people these fundamental American rights. Weingarten says, as someone who felt the sting of anti-gay prejudice growing up gay, she's proud to be part of a labor movement committed to challenging injustice and discrimination. Weingarten says the U.S. Supreme Court must overturn discriminatory laws against marriage equality. The Flight Attendants Union Coalition today blasted a Transportation Security Administration proposal to allow knives and other objects on board flights that the union calls dangerous. The Flight Attendants Union Coalition says it's a poor and short-sighted decision. As the last line of defense in airplane cabins, the attendants say, they believe the proposed changes would further endanger the lives of flight attendants and passengers. This newscast underwritten in part by the OPEIU and the IBEW. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a New Deal initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America.
He's right. He's absolutely right. You cannot have, you can't say that you're pro jobs without being pro worker. It's just not possible. And you have to have basic rights. And you know, that's really all I think we want for everybody. I've said for years, look, I don't care who's doing those jobs. I don't. As long as they're not pulling us all down. And what happens? And I've been reading the comments over at Penn Live, which I don't know why I do. I just don't know why I engage in reading ignorance, because I just can't tolerate stupid. And the sad thing is that's all that was there for the most part. But it's no wonder that stupid's running our country, because there's so much of it going on in public. And, you know, you go, well, if they don't like it, they can leave. I'm going, hey, dumb-dumb, Do you realize that these kids are not necessarily fighting for themselves, but fighting for you? Because if we allow that kind of exploitation of workers in this country, workers in this country working 25-hour shifts, not being paid overtime, being charged for their housing at exorbitant rates, being charged for their key card to get in, punch in and out of work. If we allow that to happen to them, how long is it going to take before it happens to us? And I guess you always have to bring things back to the narrow self-interest. I guess all of this has to come back to, what if it were you? What if it were your kids? The reality is, and like I said earlier, the company town never left us. It just moved to the suburbs. Because I look at that house, man, and it looks like a house that I would live in, or you would live in. And we would probably never know that there were 9 people living in the basement. Kind of exploitation that goes on. I mean, it just blows my mind. And there's part of me that says, we need to be knocking on the doors of those neighbors going, did you know what's going on? No? Well, let me tell you what's going on. And if you did know what was going on, shame on you. And that we need to start talk like that again. We need to be talking more about putting shame on people like the guy who owns the McDonald's there at 4230 Trindle Road and a couple of the other ones. I don't even know all the ones that he owns. But I was in the restaurant for a moment. Because they went in to confront the management and say, look, we're not happy with what's going on. These are our demands. And there was, a woman and her husband sitting there having their lunch and, doing the eye rolling thing and, huffing and doing all that. And I asked her, I said, do you know what's going on? And she quite candidly looked at me and said, no, and I don't care. You're disturbing my lunch. And it was at that moment that I said, we're not far enough down yet. The exploitation of workers in this country, not quite far enough down yet. Because, I think back to my grandparents. And my grandfather was, while not the most educated person in the world, was an extremely street smart guy. You got nothing by him. And he identified with people who work for a living. It didn't matter. And I guess it was that generation where if you were willing to roll up your sleeves and you were willing to get your hands dirty and do a day's work, you were kindred spirits. They would stop for each other. And I guess maybe it's just our society. Maybe it's been the last 30 years of hooray for me and screw you. And because you don't see people stopping for each other on the highway much anymore. Occasionally. I broke down a couple of times and, you had to wait for AAA or you had to wait for the police because everybody's got a cell phone and people just go zooming by because everybody's on the treadmill, man. Until it's them that need a hand. Until it's them that's being exploited. And I keep saying, we're all in this together. And it goes back to that old labor saying, an injury to one is an injury to all. And for me, if I allow what's happening to happen to these kids, whether they're citizens or not, it doesn't matter. They're human beings. They're workers. They're just like you and me. They're just like our kids. We should be standing with them. Yet when I go to these events, I like to people watch a little bit. And I like to see the reactions on people's faces and the body language that they use. It's one of the things that I do often. And instead of being uncomfortable about saying, oh, there's a large number of people, oh, we gotta put our head down, and there's nothing at your feet. And as the one chant they were saying, there's no justice on the ground. Pick your head up. Stand tall. Stand proud. While I'm hopeful, I'm still dismayed because too many of the people who drove by thought, well, that doesn't affect me. Doesn't mean anything to me. It's not my kid. It's not my family. It's nobody I know. Why should I care? And there they went. And as I said, I will never I won't go back to that McDonald's again. And maybe this is where we need to be doing more consumer action. Because at the end of this, what's frustrating is that we have allowed this kind of stuff to happen right under our nose. And I've gone to that McDonald's before, like I said. And our laws, you know, I thought this was it. I thought this was done. I thought after the Hershey thing, it would be taken care of. But here again, this to me is another, it's another one of those privatization things. It's another privatization thing that has gone awry, where we've allowed these companies to oversee themselves. And look what it's gotten us. Nothing but a headache. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Mark on line one. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
I'm doing great, Rick. And I just wanted to make a quick comment. I'm a native Illinois guy who joined the Marine Corps in 1977. I've been almost literally around the world. I'm a Union guy like yourself who loves his grandfather. I just wanted to make an observation about Pennsylvania and the heart that in your chest. Pennsylvania is a state, in my opinion, as a native Midwesterner, that has an organized society, a society that's almost probably one of the best, most organized, most tolerant, most civilized group of Americans in the country. And what you're witnessing right now is probably one of the last vestiges that's being exploited by your own citizens as well as people coming from whatever circumstance they may find themselves in. So for what you're explaining tonight, and I do appreciate what you're saying, this trend, I was just telling the man screening the calls, Rick, is something I noticed when I came to Atlanta, Georgia in 1990 after getting out of the Marine Corps prior to Desert Storm. The South, everybody's so proud to be Southern, but I never saw so many immigrant workers. And I actually piled right in with them, Rick, and worked non-union for a union company that was double-breasted here as a 31-year-old Midwesterner who hung with people younger than him because physically I still can and could then do that. But it's because I have the heart of a Pennsylvanian, and I can't say my heart is as big as yours, Rick, but what you're experiencing, the rest of the country's been aware of, and I appreciate you just mentioning it tonight, and I thank you for being on the show every night. That's all.
I appreciate that, Mark. But, you know, the thing is it doesn't have to be this way. We should be outraged. We should be in the streets. We should be screaming at the top of our lungs that this kind of exploitation, and I don't care where the person is from. It should not happen in this country. I don't care if you're here illegally, undocumented. I don't care. You
totally
dropped
agree.
Out of a plane.
Totally agree, Rick. And your humanity, I would just remind the listeners that the Bill of Freedom starts in the great state of Pennsylvania. The United Brotherhood of Carpenters basically starts at the Carpenters Hall in Philadelphia. The cradle of North American civilization starts there because it starts out of justice and having a grandfather at Streetwise. So that was not my comment. It is a torn observation of by people that have grown up here working, and we're not criticizing the worker, but we're criticizing the attitude that the woman had, said that, you know, interrupting her lunch, and that just shows you how sad it is that, you know, a Republican has to eat lunch at McDonald's and they ignore the plight of the folks that are feeding her. That's really what that says.
Yeah,
so,
excellent point.
Anyway, Rick, thank you for pushing back every night, and I've been working every night, and I'm just home for a little bit, so I'm able to listen to you.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you so much.
Right. Semper Fi, brother.
Thanks so much. Semper Fi. You know, but here again, as you know, as he said, look, you know, it's been going on in the South for all these years, and you know, we've been talking about pushing back then. Now is the time. We can't allow this stuff to continue. We gotta stop it now. And we gotta stop it for not only ourselves, but for our children. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Blue.
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Well now, here's some unexpected news. It comes from what purports to be an official document of the National Republican Party. And wow, the policy positions it contains show that the party leaders really are serious about coming to their senses and rejecting the plutocratic extremism and far-right wackiness that has stained their recent presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial campaigns. Right at the top, this 18-page manifesto proclaims that, quote, our government was created by the people for all the people, and it must serve no less a purpose. All the people. Forget last year's ridiculous pontifications by Mitt Romney and others, dividing America into virtuous creators, like themselves, and worthless moochers, like you and me. This document abounds with commitments to the common good. Quote, America does not prosper, it proudly proclaims on page 3, unless all Americans prosper. Shazam, that's downright democratic. And how's this for a complete turnaround? Labor is the United States. The men and women who, with their minds, their hearts, and hands, create the wealth that is shared in this country, they are America. Holy Koch brothers, share the wealth? Yes, and how about this? The protection of the right of workers to organize into unions and to bargain collectively is the firm and permanent policy of the Republican Party. Eat your heart out, Scott Walker and you other labor-bashing GOP governors. The document also supports the Postal Service, the United Nations, equal rights for women, expanding our national parks, vigorous enforcement of antitrust laws, and raising the minimum wage. New enlightenment in the grand old party. Hallelujah! This is Jim Hightower saying, can all this be true? Yes, except it's not new. This document is the Republican Party platform of 1956.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
We need to cut the waste so we can keep taxes down and make sure we have money for critical programs that help our families and our seniors.
From the penthouse to the basement. Well, in this situation, you look in the penthouse, you had the, well, the corporate master, and in the basement, nine J1 students, nine workers. And as I said, look, you know, the company town didn't leave us. It just moved to the suburbs. In a house that looks like anyone that you or I or any of our friends would live in. Something seriously wrong. And when those students stood up and said no, what was the first thing that the boss did? Tried to throw them out of their house, out of their basement, and tried to use the police to do it. Sad stuff. Brian sent me an email during the break. He said the sad reality is we only get outraged when it hits home. But as you point out, an injury to one is truly an injury to all. He says, get ready, Americans. 25-hour shifts are in your future if we don't fight this now. And I absolutely agree. I've got our good friend, attorney Erwin Aronson, on the line. Erwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, good to be here, pal. How are you?
I am angry. I'm furious. I'm outraged. I look at, again, another one of these J1 scandals, another situation where you've got kids from around the world coming to our shores, coming to our state, saying, you know, we want to experience the American dream. We want to experience America, and they're getting screwed.
Well, it's hard to imagine that this is happening at all. It's even harder to imagine that it's happening here in the United States. And it's downright breathtaking that it's happening here in Pennsylvania. But I'm thunderstruck that here we are, a scant year and a half later, and it's happening within spitting distance of the last time such an event took place in the United States of America, when we had this same fight for all of the same reasons over in Hershey,
yep,
August a year ago. And I was with those J-1 students when that event took place. As a matter of fact, the Hershey police, the gendarmes who had taken and arrested, taken into custody Rick Bloomingdale, the president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Kathy Jellison, the president of SEIU Local 668, the Pennsylvania Social Services Union, and Neil Bisno, the president of SEIU Healthcare in Pennsylvania, had all been arrested. And I was literally at the jailhouse trying to get them out when the police were concerned that the several hundred J-1 students who had the temerity to say that they wouldn't work under these insane illegal conditions, not to mention have this perversion of the reason that they came here to the United States to study and learn and interact with people. Police got concerned that those kids were going to riot.
As they should, but anyway, I'm thinking, as they should. I mean, there should be outrage, and we should be standing with them.
Yeah, and today we were. Again, as we were then. The leadership of Pennsylvania's labor movement stood with them shoulder to shoulder and solid. I know President Bloomingdale was there again today when another round of J-1 workers, this time employed by McDonald's in the Cumberland County suburbs of Harrisburg, were pulling the same garbage and once again trying to enlist the support and the help of the local police to not arrest the law violators, but to take control of the kids and to throw the kids out of their living quarters because they had the temerity to speak up and ask the question of why was this happening to them in the United States of all places.
Let me ask you this, Erwin, because, you know, it was a couple hours later that the bully, you want to talk about bullies, you want to talk about thugs, the guy that was the manager who came out and I say assaulted several of the people who were there. Went back to that dwelling on Maple Street, just blocks away from the McDonald's there on Trindle Road, and threw those kids, would not let them back into the quarters that they paid for, and paid $300 a month, nine of them, $300 a month to live in a basement, mm-hmm. denied them access. Is there anything legally binding? I mean, you're throwing people out of the place that they rented.
Well, there's a landlord-tenant law in Pennsylvania. And before somebody can be evicted from their dwelling under Pennsylvania law as a tenant, as a renter, generally there is a procedure and there has to be notice. There has to be a minimum amount of notice. There has to be an opportunity for a hearing before an independent body, typically a district magistrate. And once a district magistrate has heard a case and renders a decision, if it's in favor of the landlord, there has to be an additional period of time before the order of possession that would come from that is permitted to be converted into a writ of possession. And it's only after a writ of possession is issued that a landlord is allowed to repossess property from a residential tenant. There's a very plain, very specific, very detailed, statutorily created procedure. It's a matter of a law passed by the General Assembly, signed into law by the governor, that is aimed at assuring that landlords who have a lease agreement that's being violated have their rights protected, but that people who are paying rent for living in a dwelling have their rights protected. Because we as a commonwealth, remember this is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, have a fundamental interest in prohibiting, restricting, limiting and stopping homelessness. And that's what this person was created. But
even more than that, Erwin, to me, this act was terrorism. This act was.
Well, I think it is. I think it is exactly that. It's residential terrorism, and that's exactly what I've characterized it at in other situations. But at the same time, this guy who was the manager of this McDonald's store, is himself a working stiff, who is merely just like the copper bosses and the coal bosses and the coal and iron police of another generation right here in Pennsylvania. And the Pinkertons were conscripted and enlisted by the robber barons and the tycoons and the captains of industry. And
well, to steal a quote from Jay Gould, the railroad magnate of the 1880s, 1890s, yeah. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
Yeah.
We saw that in action, I believe.
I think so, too. And that was you've just summarized my point far better than I've been able to do today. I suspect that that manager who engaged in unconscionable conduct today.
Yep.
Was directed to do that by a boss, and I'm sure that that boss is paying that manager something next to nothing.
But giving him the power to be able to do what he is doing. And I look at this, and the stories that these kids told me, the nine of them living in this basement, four girls, five boys, separated by a curtain. And whenever the McDonald's needed somebody, the way it was explained to me, they would come down, roust them out of bed, whatever time of the day or night, and get them over there. It's at-will employment, but at-will slavery employment, in my view.
Well, it's wage slavery, and not even good wage slavery. And to think that this is happening not in some backwater coal patch in East Nowhere, Pennsylvania, but literally
a stone's throw from the Capitol.
A stone's throw from our Capitol, the bastion of democracy, the bastion of freedom. Give me your tired, your poor, and I'll make them more tired and more poor.
You're right. We should be changing that inscription on the at the foot of the of Lady Liberty.
Yeah, this is. I mean, it is. It shocks the conscience. It offends fundamental and basic sensibilities. And all the while, the neatly scrubbed children are being chauffeured to the Camp Hill schools in their mommy and daddy owned Mercedes SUVs. And stopping off, by the way, at McDonald's on yep. the way home from school to get a little bit of a snack.
And I stood and I watched them do that, and I watched them deliberately look the other way. And to me, that, and I had a woman tell me that she didn't care. She was giving me this roll in the eyes and huffing and puffing. I said, "Do you know what's going on?" And she looked at me and said, quite candidly, "I don't care. You're disrupting my lunch."
Well, and you know what? The best thing that happened out of this is that the activity today did take place, and a light is being shined on it. And just about half an hour ago, I got an email, and it shows me that this is not merely a local story, but this has already gone national.
As it should. So the question that I have is, you know, here we are, a year and a half, two really very major situations like this. How pervasive is this abuse of the J-1 program? And shouldn't we be considering not allowing it to continue in its privatized form?
Well, very clearly, this is a shining example of what privatization really means. That when we convert taxpayer-financed programs from public oversight to private greed, something breaks. And in every instance, it is humanity that breaks. Every instance, every time, every place, every turn. And unlike the people at Hershey who pretended to turn a blind eye to all that happened because they said, "Oh, gee, it wasn't us, it was this other company," now we know that it wasn't this other company, that it was the franchise holder of this McDonald's.
And several others in talking to the, it's all around the area. And then the question is when do we get to know where these kids worked at? And what I want to know is why am I not allowed as a citizen to know where these J-1 visa students are being placed? Why is it I can't, why is that information not available?
Well, buttress that question with how much less are we going to know because of sequestration and programs that get slashed and burned and cut and enforcement that winnows away and dwindles simply because and exclusively because First we decided to privatize, then we decided to cut back. So I think you're quite right. Where does this stop? Where does it go? How does it end? When does the exploitation become itself the victim?
Because these kids, everyone that I talked to said their entire lives, they looked to this country as the example, as the at the top of the hill. This is what we aspire to be. We want to be like Americans. We want to come and experience what it's like to be a proud American and what it's like to pursue that American dream. They came here with wide eyes and eager to learn about our culture. And as I told one of them, you now know what it's like to be a low-wage worker in this country.
Yeah. Well, one of the intriguing things of my experience in the Hershey battle of not all that long ago was when our friends and colleagues were arrested and incarcerated for engaging in free speech and for engaging in very mild and modest civil disobedience by sitting down on a public access road. And the police came to me and told me they were very concerned, as I alluded to a few minutes ago, about this 300-odd member group of kids who had been the victims of exploitation, and they're concerned about a riot. I said to the police officer and the district attorney at the time who were there talking with me and negotiating over the terms of the release of the Hershey 3, that, you know, fellas, you just incarcerated the only three adults involved in all of this stuff. And you took them away in handcuffs in front of those 300-odd kids.
Yeah.
And they all come from countries where when somebody goes away in handcuffs, they never get seen again. So if you don't give me back my people so that I can take them to a place where these 300 kids are assembled so that they can see that the people who stood up for them are safe and secure and in my custody and not yours, I can't tell you what's going to happen. And one of the realities is the kids that you met today in this McDonald's mess, the kids who had the courage, without having common languages, without having citizenship rights, without having much of anything other than the clothes on their back, to engage in a work stoppage, those kids with all of that courage doubtlessly had a similar experience, and had they seen anybody carted off in handcuffs, or when the boss comes around and beats on the door to rouse them to tell them it's time to go to work even though they just got off of a 12-hour shift. Or when that same boss says, I'm not letting you back in your living quarters where you have all of your belongings on this continent. They have a very different view of that than you or I or our listeners who have lived in this country forever have.
Yeah.
Because they know that human nature is what it is. And sometimes human nature can't be balanced against the paper on which laws and regulations are written.
You know, I got to be honest, you know, I was in awe of the courage of these kids because, you know, they weren't fighting for themselves and they knew that. Mm-hmm. They knew they were going back home at some point in the near future. And, you know, a lot of people would just say, you know what, screw them. As soon as I'm done with this nightmare, I'm done with it. But they actually think about the next generation, the next J-1 visa student coming into this country. And, oh, by the way, their coworkers who are at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder in this country, they want to see them do better as well.
Yeah.
That, to me, just that says a lot about these kids.
I think it speaks volumes about these kids. And I hope that our own kids here in the States see this and learn a lesson from it about convictions and courage and principles and about knowing that sometimes injustice is so fundamental that you must speak out and you must act.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Irwin, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time, and thanks for the insight here.
Thank you. Thanks for asking the questions, and thanks for bringing me on. And next week, we need to visit a couple of huge decisions that have come down this week from the Pennsylvania judicial system. So I'll leave that hanging as a tickler for the next time I get a privilege of being on your show.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Erwin.
Thank you. Take good care.
Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Ocean of Red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
In a beehive, there's usually just one queen. What happens when the queen dies? Can she be replaced?
When a bee colony loses a queen, say she's accidentally killed, the worker bees notice the absence of a chemical the queen produces, a pheromone. In response to the absence of the queen's scent, the workers begin a process of emergency queen rearing. They start building queen-size rearing chambers for about 10 to 20 young female larvae.
That same process happens if the queen is dying of old age. As she ages, the queen produces fewer pheromones. The decline in pheromone concentration signals to the workers to start building queen-sized cells in the hive. The queen herself lays the eggs of her potential bee princesses into these cells.
Ordinarily, these eggs would hatch into female larvae who would grow up as workers. But since they're inside special, larger, vertically oriented cells, the workers know to feed these bee princesses a special food called royal jelly. This diet creates a fertile queen rather than a sterile worker.
The first queen to emerge from her cell as an adult will sting the other developing queens to death in their cells before they hatch. If two should emerge at the same time, then the rival queens will have a battle to the death. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for Queen Bee.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at EarthSky.org.
When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money. Even if it has been money for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I'll tell you, this is one of those days where you go, you know, you just cannot believe, that woman just, wow. I mean, if I was, strangling came to mind. You just go, wow. To look somebody in there and go, you know, I don't care. I don't care about them. That just speaks volumes to me to where we have come as a nation. Because I truly believe, it's my views on things. That, you know, at the end of it, what I want is I want all of us to do better. It's just, you know, so much of this just leaves me shaking my head. And as we see numbers coming out, we see study after study, wages are declining. The last thing I just saw, the real median income in the U.S., adjusted for inflation, in 2007 was almost $55,000. $54,489. 2011, that had dropped all the way down to $50,000 a year. That's the median income. And to me, what it says is what we're allowing to happen is all of this exploitation at the bottom, which is pulling us down. So if you need a reason to support these kids, or you need a reason to support the Hoffman guys who have been locked out for 2 years in the Reading area because the boss said, what, you're not going to take a pay cut and you're not going to pay half of your salary for health care? To the curb with you. We're done talking. 2 years to the curb. At some point, we've got to turn around and go, you know what? What happens to them? What happens to those kids at that McDonald's? What happens to those kids at the Hershey warehouse? What happens to those workers at Hoffman? What happened to those workers at Castlewood out in California? Could happen to any one of us at any time. And you look at as the stock market has hit its absolute pinnacle since the Depression, what's happened to wages? What's happened to people's benefits? What's happened to working conditions? And I go back to what I said to one of these J1 kids this morning. I said, you know, unfortunately, what you're getting is a cultural experience that you didn't want, but you're getting it anyway. This is what happens to low-wage workers in this country. It's this kind of exploitation. It's this kind of abuse. Maybe not as extreme. Maybe not 25-hour shifts without being paid. Well, no, wait a minute. Come to think about it, I do know people who have worked 25 and 30-hour shifts. Yeah, me. Back when I was a young man, it's what we've allowed to happen in this country because we haven't drawn that line in the sand. We haven't said no. What we've allowed to happen is we've allowed ourselves to be exploited, and it's no wonder that an employer like this McDonald's thinks that. And I tell you right now, I'll bet you the guy who owns that place will say, well, I'm giving these kids an opportunity. Shouldn't I be rewarded for my wonderfulness? Shouldn't I be thanked for giving them a place to stay, even if it is, what, almost $3,000 a month that he's putting in his pocket? I'll bet you he believes that he's the benevolent one. He's the one being attacked because that's what we've allowed the wealthy in this country to think, that everything that we fight for, everything that we work for, somehow they give it to us. They bestow it upon us because they're so benevolent and wonderful. And if it weren't for them, we would be just standing around. We've allowed that to happen, and we've allowed it to happen by turning our backs on our neighbors, by turning our backs on our coworkers, and turning our backs on what's going on to these kids as well. And I'm hoping that, you know, the light bulb goes on very soon, that you hear the story, and you go, you know what? That could be me. That could be my kid. That could be someone that I love. Then you say no more, and we draw that line, and we say never again. It's that simple. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, you can download it there at thericksmithshow.com. Or if you've got the Stitcher app on your smartphone, you can take the program on your go. Take a quick break, back with hour two. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. We got to do it today.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Bills to raise the minimum wage have been introduced in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says Senator Tom Harkin and Representative George Miller have taken a stand for millions of struggling families by introducing the bills. Henry says anyone with a job should not have to live in poverty. Henry says raising the minimum wage is a good thing for the economy because it puts more money in the pockets of people who will spend it. She called on the Senate and the House to pass the bills raising the minimum wage from the current $7.25 an hour to $10.10 an hour. A sizable chunk of the sequester cuts come from keeping the country safe. Jesse Russell reports.
President Barack Obama has begun reaching out to a new group of Republicans in an effort to fix the drastic cuts that went into effect this week due to the sequester. Senator Susan Collins, Bob Corker, and Rob Portman have been contacted by the president in an effort to break a logjam that's been created by Republican leadership in Congress. Meanwhile, the impact of the cuts are starting to be felt throughout the country. Some of the cuts include $57 million to help reduce health care fraud and abuse, $125 million from wildlife fire management, $928 million from disaster relief, and $633 million from special education programs. Some of the biggest cuts come from areas that ensure the nation's security. Perhaps most strikingly, in light of the controversy surrounding Benghazi, is the $79 million that has been slashed from embassy security around the globe. In addition, the cuts also include $549 million from border protection and $604 million from the National Nuclear Security Administration.
The AFL-CIO and Change to Win labor federations have filed amicus briefs challenging laws that ban gay marriage. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says that we're a nation built on the belief of equality for all, and laws banning marriage equality for gays deny people these fundamental American rights. Weingarten says, as someone who felt the sting of anti-gay prejudice growing up gay, she's proud to be part of a labor movement committed to challenging injustice and discrimination. Weingarten says the U.S. Supreme Court must overturn discriminatory laws against marriage equality. The Flight Attendants Union Coalition today blasted a Transportation Security Administration proposal to allow knives and other objects on board flights that the union calls dangerous. The Flight Attendants Union Coalition says it's a poor and short-sighted decision. As the last line of defense in airplane cabins, the attendants say, they believe the proposed changes further endanger the lives of flight attendants and passengers. This newscast underwritten in part by the OPEIU and the IBEW.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Jan emails me with just one word, unbelievable. And it is. I mean, we just went through this with the Hershey Company, just went through this whole, the same scenario, and yet here we are, within a stone's throw of the Capitol. The exact same thing. So I wonder, you know, how much of this is going on in neighborhoods around this area? I mean, I walked onto Maple Street where these kids live in the basement of this house. And I go, you know, that's a neighborhood that I would live in. How much of this is going on? How pervasive is this? And the other question is, what if it were my kids? What if it were your kids? Something seriously wrong, which is why I've asked a couple of the kids to come talk with us. I've got Jorge Rijos. He is here from Argentina, here on that cultural exchange program, experience that he was looking for. He's gotten an experience. Jorge, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, how are you?
Tell me what the action today, what prompted it?
Well, basically we realize that we have been being exploited by this person, our employer, because we came to realize that we paid between $3,000 and $4,000 in the case of the Asian girls to come here to do this cultural exchange. And we found ourselves living in our employer's basement, paying him rent for those basements, and at the same time working for him in conditions which were only suitable and profitable for him, but realized that they didn't care about the experience we were having here, which was supposed to be an experience to interact with Americans, right, to learn about your culture, to travel around, to visit places, to, I mean?
Would it be safe to say that your expectations of this program have not been anywhere near what you had hoped for?
Exactly, because this was supposed to be an opportunity, like I told you, to interact, to travel, and we didn't have chances to do that. We've been here basically just working all day, being on call for them because they want us to be on call, because we are basically, like one of our coworkers, American coworkers, said, we are their little slaves. They can just, whenever they need us, they will have us working, and when they don't need us, they won't. So there's a contract in between that established that we will have transportation to the workplace, we will have rooms, and none of those were fulfilled. We are living in a basement. We have to walk to work, which is actually not
too long. It's a dangerous road.
Yeah, it's dangerous because, well, this is different in our countries, but here it's mostly, at least in this area, it's mostly highways. So there are no sidewalks. And it's very dangerous because cars pass us by and really drivers don't pay much attention to people walking because they don't expect anyone walking around. Everyone has cars here. I mean, it's really rare to see people walking.
And not to mention that the path that you had to walk to get there, it's a non-pedestrian path where you could be ticketed every day for crossing the street because there's a sign right there that says no pedestrian.
Exactly, exactly. We recently knew that we are actually, committing some sort of crime or fault, I don't know how to say it, because we're not supposed to be walking around those areas, let's say. So we could have gotten arrested because we were walking around in those places.
Yeah, or at least fined. Let me ask you this, Jorge, in looking at this from before you got here, what were your hopes? What were your aspirations? What did you think you were going to gain from this? Because as you told me, you don't come from a wealthy family. This was actually a struggle for you to come here and take part in this. What were you hoping? What were the dreams that you'd had coming here?
Well, back in Argentina when I was there considering this idea, it sounded like the perfect chance to come to the United States because, we had the chance to recover the money that we were investing. So that played a major role in my decision, let's say, because I said, okay, I will invest this money, but then I will get it back. Plus, I will learn, I will see the American culture with my own eyes, I will experience it. So, in the end, I got none of those.
Let me ask you, and as you were growing up, and you told me an interesting story, as you were growing up thinking about our country, thinking about, coming to America, what were your ideals as a kid when you were looking at the United States, and what were your thoughts of this country then, and then compare that to how you feel now?
Well, as a child, I grew up in the 90s, and in Argentina, we got to see lots of TV programs from the United States, so we had like a very positive view, let's say, on the United States. And then as I grew grew up more, let's say, like at school, we learned some things which are rather negative as regards the United States. So I didn't want to be a prejudice, so I want to see with my own eyes what it was like. But unfortunately, the aspect of the American culture that I got to see, of course, I'm aware of this. It's just like the worst, not the nice part of it, let's say. I know there's so much to America than what we've been put through. I know that we actually met a few people in the little times that we had. We met a few people, even at the McDonald's, we had like chances to speak for a very limited amount of time with people, and they are very kind, very generous, and they are actually very friendly. So that's the part of the American culture that we all were expecting to see. So we wanted to share our culture. Also, we often want to speak about what we do, what we believe in, and like a real culture exchange. That was right. The whole idea of this program.
You wanted to take more away from your experience here than other than being able to say, do you want fries with that?
Exactly, exactly. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So the action today, which I thought was a really powerful event, I thought it was well put together. I thought that you got a lot of community support out of this. Where do you go from here? I mean, I understand that the people who are living in the basement of one of the houses, the one on Maple Street anyway, they have been turned away from their home. Has that changed at this point?
Well, before I answer your last question, I would like to tell you, one of the aspects that is very worrying about this is that as a student, I mean, these people are employers. They have everything very systematized, let's say. So to the point that we all started internalizing that we were going through was okay. So they are counting on the fact that we are here for only 3 months, so that we will just, like, we will decide to just resist and wait for this to end and go back home. That was actually happening to us. But somehow we said, no, we have to do something about this. And that's how we came in contact with the people from the National Guest Workers Alliance, and they were actually the ones who responded the fastest, and the one who started helping us, and they are helping us right now, actually. And yes, we organized this. I mean, we got organized, and we decided to do this because we think it's important not only for us, because we could have just said, I mean, some of us are leaving in a week, so some of us are leaving in 2 weeks, but we could have said, no, let's just resist a bit more and this will be over. But we decided that this is important because if we don't do anything about it, it will go on happening. Yep. And no one deserves this.
Nope.
Even less so if you are being misled, let's say, if you're being deceived because they promised you something, you pay for something, and then the experience has nothing to do with what you were promised.
Yeah, and I give you guys, and as I told the number of the people that I talked to today, I give you the utmost credit for looking out for the people who may come behind you, because it would have been easy to say, I'm going to do my week or two or whatever, and I'm getting out of here, I'll put this behind me, and the heck with the people behind me, and the heck with the people who, the American workers who have those jobs. I give you guys credit for standing up and saying we want to make it better, not just for ourselves, but for the next guy behind us and behind us.
Yes, we actually know that our employer is bringing more students from Asia next week. And we said, no, we have to do something. We don't want them to go through this. And we know exactly what is going to happen. So we don't want them to have to suffer as we have suffered these mistreatments.
Or, hey, I appreciate the time. When you go back to your country, have good thoughts about our country. There are good, decent people here in this country, and not everyone is. Like the person that's doing this.
Don't worry. I know that we were just unlucky to end up with these people, and it's just their greed that unfortunately is overshadowing. I don't know if that's the term. Sorry, my English is not that good, but I guess the idea is that they are like overshining or overshadowing,
overbearing, and overpowerful, and all of those things.
Everything that is good about the American culture. So. Thank you for giving us a chance to tell our story. This shouldn't happen.
I'm right there with you. I appreciate it, Jorge. Let's go to Alicia Marim. She's from Paraguay, one of the folks today at the event, and one of the workers who is in the process and is being exploited. Alicia, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi.
Tell me your story.
Okay. Well, I come here, the same guys, and to the exchange culture, but they give me a lot of hours to work, and I don't have any choice. And when they say, and we need you here, and I need to stay there, I can leave the work. They say, no, go out. Or the first time was in New Year, was in December 31, and was my day off, and they come to my house, and they say, hey, we need you because we don't have any people to work today. And I say, well, but we can come again and like at 8 in the night because we have a dinner tonight. And they say, yes, sure. And then was 11 and 11:30, we are working, and we don't have any dinner for New Year. And then was like a four time again, they say, no, you need to stay. And my schedule was like three p.m. to 11, the last day. And then the next day was like a 6 to 3. And then they say, no, you need to stay to 11. And we stay all this day working, with just one break in the morning, one meal, and they say that I can, you can move in your position because it's busy now, and I can go in the bathroom. I can take a drink, like a water or nothing, because I'm the cashier. And they just say that you don't move. You need to stay. You need to stay there.
That's horrible, Alicia. You know, let me ask you, before you came here, and I'll ask you the same question I asked Jorge, what were your expectations? What did you think this was going to be? What were your hopes that this would turn into?
Well, I just...
Not this, right?
Yeah, no, because in my contract, say, in 80 hours for 40 hours per week is 8 hours per day, and now every day. No Sunday, Saturday, or whatever is my day off. But and this week my schedule was like I don't have any day off. And yesterday they say me that I need to stay there, and I say no, I don't want to stay here. I'm tired. I want to go home.
And now, do you work more than 40 hours? I mean, are they paying overtime, or do they not even do that?
No.
So just they're breaking even the most basic of labor laws, not even talking about being decent people. They're just blatantly breaking all the laws then.
Yeah, because they bring me, they drive me to my house, and when I say, no, I don't want to stay, they say, okay, go walk into house because I don't drive you today.
That's horrible.
And I need to stay. And I work like 15 hours. And the last time when I say no was, no, we need you. And my manager said that. And it was like, and he wants to put in my mind the people, the students every time come here. And they work, and he say, the Asian people, they don't sleep. They just work. And I say, okay, but I don't want to work too much. I'm tired too. I want to go in my house.
You want to experience, you want to do what you came here to do, which is experience our culture. And some would argue that you've experience what it is to be a low-wage worker in this country. So my question for you is, when you return to Paraguay, what are you going to tell the people about our country? Because I can't imagine that you came here expecting to be exploited like this. What are you going to go home with?
Yeah, well, when I go again back in my country, I say, oh, wow, I need my bed because I can feel my legs, I can feel my feet. Because I stand up every day, and that's crazy. Because
it is crazy.
Here is just working, and they say this is American. The people here working every day, just work. And I say okay, but I want to sleep too.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming this has been a real experience for you. But I hope that when you return to your country, you won't think that all Americans are like the handful that you've met there. And last question I've got for you. Are you one of the residents at the Maple Street house with the eight or nine people in the basement?
No, and I saw the because we are all friends with the students. But I live in the Culture Street, and it's a house. But my case is that they give me a lot of hours. This is my protest.
Right.
Because they give me a lot of hours, and I don't have choice. And the last time when I say no, and I told like 1 hour and a half with my manager, and I cry, and he say, no, you understand me. And I say, no, you don't understand me. I'm tired.
Now, have they threatened to send you home? Have they threatened repercussions beyond saying we're not gonna take you back to your home? All right. Well, I wish you nothing but the best, and I appreciate the fight that you're putting up because, look, you're saving the next you behind you from having to deal with this. Alicia Marim, I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks
so
much.
Thank you, guys, for your support, really.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Well now, here's some unexpected news. It comes from what purports to be an official document of the National Republican Party. And wow, the policy positions it contains show that the party leaders really are serious about coming to their senses and rejecting the plutocratic extremism and far-right wackiness that has stained their recent presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial campaigns. Right at the top, this 18-page manifesto proclaims that, quote, our government was created by the people for all the people, and it must serve no less a purpose. All the people. Forget last year's ridiculous pontifications by Mitt Romney and others, dividing America into virtuous creators, like themselves, and worthless moochers, like you and me. This document abounds with commitments to the common good. Quote, America does not prosper, it proudly proclaims on page 3, unless all Americans prosper. Shazam, that's downright democratic. And how's this for a complete turnaround? Labor is the United States. The men and women who with their minds, their hearts, and hands create the wealth that is shared in this country, they are America. Holy Koch brothers, share the wealth? Yes, and how about this? The protection of the right of workers to organize into unions and to bargain collectively is the firm and permanent policy of the Republican Party. Eat your heart out, Scott Walker and you other labor-bashing GOP governors. The document also supports the Postal Service, the United Nations, equal rights for women, expanding our national parks, vigorous enforcement of antitrust laws, and raising the minimum wage. New enlightenment in the grand old party. Hallelujah! This is Jim Hightower saying, can all this be true? Yes, except it's not new. This document is the Republican Party platform of 1956.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Just when he thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alerts.
I look at this, and again, you know, we just went through this whole fight. And what blows my mind is, you know, did we learn nothing from the Hershey situation? You know, I'm sure it's just, you know, it's more of the same actors with just different names. And just like with the workers in the situation at Hershey, I think these kids need to be made whole. They took out massive loans for them in their countries to come here to get that experience, to get that cultural exchange, and to be able to make a little bit of money. Look, they're not saying that they shouldn't work. They're not saying that. They're saying they shouldn't be working at exploitative situations. And, you know, you think about it, I wonder, and I would love to see one of these contracts, because, you know, I was reading the Penn Live comments. It just blows my mind at some of the ignorant comments you get on there, because I think it is when people just throw dumb things out there just to be contrary. I mean, you've got some folks who are like that. But I would love to see one of these contracts. But more importantly, I would like to know how many of these employers are amongst us. How many of them are around? Because it's still, I mean, it's still stuck in my head. You walk down that street and it's suburban America. The company store, the company town is right there in suburbia. And I wonder how much. And as I was asking some of the people from the different groups who were there working with these kids, you know, where's the oversight? You know, how does this all work? And evidently there's a private company that, because we've privatized this, because, you know, hey, like our friend Erwin Aronson said, you know, with the sequester and all the cuts and cuts, the oversight's gone. And I was told there are 8 inspectors throughout the entire country that oversee this program. The entire country, 8 people. And that there's no database for me to, as a citizen to go, okay, well, let me see where these J-1 visa students are working. Where there would be an organization to go, you know what, we're going to check up on this. We're going to hold these employers to account. Because you stop and think about this, and we learn the exact same thing with the Hershey kids. These employers, they bring these kids in, they pay them minimum wage, and then they charge them through the nose for living expenses. So while you go, yeah, I'm going to make $7.25 an hour, and wherever we're from, that's probably a decent bit of change. We'll be over 3 months, we'll easily make the $3,500 or the $4,000 back to pay the loan. We'll have the experience, we'll have worked a little bit, and we'll be able to go home with a couple of bucks in our pocket. It's a win-win situation. Then you find out that they're charging you $300 a month for a part of a basement, not even a room. And then they're charging you for everything else. Nickel and diming you to death until at the end of the week you go. And I remember the Hershey kid showing me his check after 40 hours of work, 88 cents. Mind blowing. And yet, the woman says she didn't care. I mean, that's going to stick with me for a while. And I understand you got a bunch of yuppies running around who all they care about is themselves. They feel it's never going to be them. And the reality is as long as we as a nation think, well, it's never going to be me, we're pretty much guaranteeing ourselves at some point it's going to be. Because understand, we're all in the, whether you like it or not, we're all in the shark tank. It's just a matter of when our number is. You know, when we're going to be the flavor of the month. And I look at all of these stories across the country of, you know, like I said earlier, the median income in this country has gone down over the last 4 years, almost $5,000. That's wealth that has been taken from you and me. And, of course, given upward. And we see the studies, but you don't need me to tell you what the studies are. You're living it. We're all living what's going on, which is a theft from the working class to the very wealthy. And we're using kids like this to pull us down even farther, even faster. And while, you know, in talking with those two kids, you know, I hope they go back to their country and they say, you know what, I got screwed in this experience and I got screwed by these people. But as a country, people there are decent. And the respect, because understand, these are going to be the ambassadors. These are going to be the leaders of the next generation. And by us allowing them to be exploited just makes no sense on a whole number of levels. It's just flat wrong. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on out in the Reading area. This Hoffman Industries kicked their employees to the curb 2 years ago because they didn't want to sit down and negotiate for a contract. So they said, there's the curb. You're done. Another example of our broken labor laws. Quick break. Right back.
I just don't need one. the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Earth, sky.
In a beehive, there's usually just one queen. What happens when the queen dies? Can she be replaced?
When a bee colony loses a queen, say she's accidentally killed, the worker bees notice the absence of a chemical the queen produces, a pheromone. In response to the absence of the queen's scent, the workers begin a process of emergency queen rearing. They start building queen-size rearing chambers for about 10 to 20 young female larvae.
That same process happens if the queen is dying of old age. As she ages, the queen produces fewer pheromones. The decline in pheromone concentration signals to the workers to start building queen-sized cells in the hive. The queen herself lays the eggs of her potential bee princesses into these cells.
Ordinarily, these eggs would hatch into female larvae who would grow up as workers. But since they're inside special, larger, vertically oriented cells, the workers know to feed these bee princesses a special food called royal jelly. This diet creates a fertile queen rather than a sterile worker.
The first queen to emerge from her cell as an adult will sting the other developing queens to death in their cells before they hatch. If two should emerge at the same time, then the rival queens will have a battle to the death. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for Queen Bee.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at EarthSky.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Well, we're going to go from one story of exploitation of student workers from around the world here in our backyard to the broken nature of our labor laws that allow employers now to say, you know what, you're not going to allow us to impose our will on you. You think you're going to sit and negotiate with us? Well, we're going to kick you to the curb. And it's been 2 years now that these workers at Hoffman Industries in the Reading area have been kicked to the curb by this employer. And look, this is, to me, another reason why we absolutely need comprehensive labor law reform in this country. To go back to the, and I love the original intent, people, to go back to the original intent of the National Labor Relations Act, which puts no rights on the backs of employers. This is about workers. And right now the pendulum has swung way too far into the hands of the employers, which is why I've asked Dean Showers. He's with USW Local 6996. They're part of the Hoffman Industries crew there. Dean, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
Not what I would consider a happy anniversary, I would say. 2 years since you guys got kicked to the curb.
No, yeah, that's true. You said it all when you say kick to the curb, you're done. So today I'm kind of really angry, and I'm also grateful that we have friends in the labor community that were on display today. I want to thank you and others for braving the inclement weather to come down and share a little bit of time with us on the picket line today.
Well, here's the thing, Dean. Wherever workers are struggling, wherever the fight is where we're going to be, because I am a firm believer of an injury to one is an injury to all. And if we allow workers at the McDonald's who are being screwed over with the J-1 visa program, or workers who are working for Hoffman Industries to get screwed over, I think we all lose.
That's true. And it's just unbelievable that we have to go through this J-1 visa thing again so close together. It's just unbelievable the length that some of these business owners will go to increase their profits at the expense of workers. You know, the Hoffman thing, 2 years now, it's really sad. You know, we never really had a chance to do collective bargaining here. That's the sad part of it. So they say they continue to bargain in good faith. We know that that's not true. They just don't want to have a union contract anymore, so they just want to skirt the NLRB and just operate union-free.
But at some point, don't the laws have to be updated to the point to where, you know, you have to sit down and at least negotiate in good faith where there's got to be some time frame? I mean, 2 years is completely outrageous. It's in my mind, unfathomable that we would have a law in this country that would allow that to continue.
Yeah, I mean, the laws are just very weak and inadequate.
Skewed. Heavily skewed towards the employers, the people who have the ability to lobby Congress and to lobby for laws and to be able to, well, starve the workforce out. Because after 2 years, I don't know how you still have guys who are willing to stand and fight. I'm glad you do. And I hope it goes another day or another month, I hope there are people out there. But, you know, at the end of the day, people have families.
Yeah, and I want to give a shout out to those families. You know, the picketers are really unbelievable, hanging in there for 2 years. But their families at home are really also heroes. They've hung in there. We've managed to stay together. One thing during this 2 years, I do think the company underestimated our resolve and our solidarity. This is more than just a 2 year thing now. This is personal for most of us that are still picketing, and we want payback. Naturally, we'd like to go back to work with a fair deal, but to be honest with you, we're not going to walk away from this and let them run away scot free. So I think they've misunderstood the resolve and the solidarity of this group and steel workers in general. The International Union has stood firmly behind us. The only real motive for the International Union and the local union and the workers at Hoffman are to get a fair deal and go back to work.
Right.
Unfortunately, we work for an employer who has mismanaged himself into a corner and has taken marching orders, it seems, off their financiers, which says if you want to continue to be financed, you dump that union contract, and that's what they did.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me is, you know, it's those guys who are standing out on the picket line that built that company, years and years of dedicated service, years of loyalty, and how is that loyalty rewarded? Well, by being kicked to the curb.
It's true, and I just for your listeners, I just want to give an example. I'm a 40-year employee for this company, and I don't even make the top 10 on the seniority roster of the employees that are locked out. Which brings me to another whole rant here. When I say I'm angry, I'm not just angry at Hoffman, and I'm not just angry at that employer up there that did this to these J-1 visa students. I'm angry at the system, and when I say that, I'm angry at these temporary worker companies, the personnel agencies.
Scabs for hire.
The ones that had to get in there, and I do believe if fend for themselves to gather employees, I do believe it would be a lot different. I don't know if we'd be back to work or not, but I can tell you this. I don't think this lockout would have lasted anything close to the 2 years that it has lasted. And I want to give your listeners just an idea of what we face here. These temp agencies, they put 30 workers in there the first week we were locked out. These temp agencies make anywhere from 45% and higher on their, what we call their VIG, their rates on these workers.
Yep.
So you got a guy or a woman in there making $10 an hour, and the temp agency is garnering $4.50 an hour for the sweat that they do. So you put 10 workers in there, 40 hours a week, the temp agency makes somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1,800. And when you put that into perspective and run that around multiple employees, and I mean, it's just a huge, huge gold mine for these temp agencies. And they have no compassion. They're private business. They should be able to pick and choose their clients. But they're most of them are just too damn greedy, and they'll take a client like Hoffman regardless of what the situation is. They don't tell the people that come down to replace it that there's a lockout in place, and that the employees that you see that are picketing, they do own those jobs. And under the federal law, we still are the incumbent employees for this employer, so they cannot hire anybody permanently there. The temp agency should have to tell these employees that as long as those employees are on lockout and they still have a right to those jobs under federal law. So I just want to also inform your listening audience that we have begun to push legislation to our friends in Harrisburg for what we're calling a temporary workers' bill of rights. And basically, it's a very simple start to kind of put these temp agencies in check, to let them know that we're watching you. And they passed some similar legislation up in Massachusetts in 2012, which went into law at the end of January this year. And basically, it's a really simple thing. It lists a whole bunch of things that temp agencies are required to do when they place people into work sites.
Right.
And one of those things is that if there's a strike or a lockout, they must tell the people that they're sending over that is going on. They have to tell them, give them some basic information of what they're getting into. Because I have stopped some of the temporary workers that are going into Hoffman to kind of say, you know, what are you doing, you know? Don't you understand what's going on here? And the temp agencies don't tell them what's going on. And a lot of them are chronically unemployed, and they've told me, you know, I would have took this assignment had I known what I was getting into. But once you take an assignment, if you go back and tell them, hey, I don't want it because I feel I don't want to take the jobs of these people out on the picket line, they'll kind of like X you off their list, and they won't call you for any work then. So it's a sad situation. I do believe we need to pass some legislation in Pennsylvania to put these temp agencies on notice that we're watching them. Another thing is this kind of legislation will kind of disincentivize the trend right now for employers is to say, hey, screw our HR. We'll just let temp agencies hire for us. That way we can pick and choose who we want. We can drive wages and benefits down at the same time. It's a win-win situation for everybody but the worker.
Yeah, it's a good business decision. Well, let me ask you, and going forward now, it's been 2 years. Where is this going? Do you have negotiations set up? Is there any ongoing talks? What's going on?
We have negotiations set up for March 28th. Unfortunately, the company canceled the scheduled one for February. They said they had a date mix-up. The two before that were also canceled, but that was, we have a federal mediator, and I do believe that there were some conflicts with his schedule that the company was all too eager to
exploit.
Not get another date closer than they kept pushing it out like two more January of 2011, the company gave us a 50 to 60% pay cut offer. That's for wages. They also gave us a health insurance raise to our co-pays from, I'll just give you a, it went from like $32 a week for a family plan up to $273 per week for the family plan.
That's outrageous.
They also decided that they didn't want a defined pension plan that they mismanaged and got it into default. And they also didn't want to have any kind of severance language. So, you know, it's that was their offer in February. That was their offer when they locked us out March 6, 2011, and that continues to be their offer in 2013, 2 years later.
Now, so much for negotiations.
Now, at the same time, the company top management, which are probably like six or seven people in what we call their management team, they have not taken any kind of reductions in their compensation. They continue to drive company-paid-for vehicles, most of them. They continue to get their health care paid. They continue to get their wages, whatever they were in March of 2011. The union's approach has been, from day one of the start of the negotiations in February, okay, you're in financial difficulty, okay, you know, let's talk about it, let's work it out. The union realized we were going to do concessionary bargaining from the start of the negotiations, and we were willing to put concessions on the table. Unfortunately, the company, if they were really serious about getting something done, there would have been a level of shared sacrifice from both the hourly workforce and the salaried workforce. But that they made that perfectly clear in negotiations that salary workforce is not taking one dime pay cut because we've been underpaid for years while you guys have been
overpaid. I've heard that a whole bunch. You know, those greedy workers, you know, the people who actually create the wealth and do the work that people sitting in the office don't quite understand or know how to do. Yeah, I've seen that played out. But here, 2 years, I just mind-blowing, and the fact that our laws allow that to happen. But I got to be honest, I was out on the picket line seeing those people standing together, seeing your coworkers standing together with the resolve of they're going to be there one day longer, that they're going to win this battle. I'm hopeful, and I wish you guys nothing but the best. And you, please come back, tell us what's going on, keep us updated. And if there's anything that we can do, Dean, you know we'll be right there for you.
Well, you're doing it every night on your show. You're letting all us workers and citizens know what's going on with working people, and that's all we can ask for from you, Rick. So I want to just tell you that we all appreciate what you're doing with your show, and we can't wait till your show gets some airtime here in the Reading area.
Yeah, well, we're working on that, and hopefully that will be very soon. Dean Showers, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Rick.
Representative of USW Local 6996 out in the Reading area. Quick break, right back, 1-888-520-RICK,
1-888-520-7425. 90% of the people own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
Ask Me Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Well, the war on workers continues. You look at this sequester that just happened and the money that's being pulled out of the economy. Well, it's going to harm workers all across the country, but in one of our listening areas up near the Toby Hanna Army Depot, $309 million in budget cuts. That's going to cause about 5,136 civilian employees to lose a good bit of work. In fact, 22 non-consecutive furlough days are going to happen between late April and September 30th. You think about all of that money, that $309 million that's being yanked out of that local economy, and what's that going to mean? Well, you stop and you look at what's going on just at Toby Hanna. That $309 million represents 35% of their entire operating budget. Think about that. Now, this facility is our military's primary facility to repair and maintain communications and electronics equipment. Our primary facility, we just cut $309 million from it. Not to mention, it is, for those who've been up in the Scranton area there, it is one of the cornerstones of the Northeast's economic engine. 5,136 civilian employees. Going to lose 22 days apiece. You start thinking about all the money that's going to be taken out of the local economy. And, you know, as I've said to a number of people in the past, you know, that money that they used to spend in your shop, that money that they used to spend in the local economy that created local jobs, you know, you remember that? Gone. And for what? So that a handful of right-wingers could say, we won! We got what we wanted. And, you know, I'm with some of the right-wingers on the austerity bomb. It was a bad idea, and it was Obama's idea. He was one of the ones who pushed for it, but understand, the Republicans and a good number of Democrats voted for it as well. And in my view, stupidly, because there is that group of radicals in the right wing of the Republican Party who, they don't care, man. They got their talking point. They didn't have to do a thing to get these cuts. And now that 5,136 person workforce, they're going to lose a good chunk of change over the next couple of months. 22 days per employee. So you think about 22 days. That is more than a month's work. So of the next 6 months, they're going to lose over 1 month. What's that going to do to the local economy? Can't be good. And the thing that gets me is we're watching real time. Because over in Europe, they're saying, well, austerity's here to stay, and unemployment's going to keep going up, and all the bad things are going to continue to happen, but we're staying the course. Because maybe if we keep doing it, it'll work once. And I go back to this whole thing of this whole tax cut mentality. this whole hand everything to the very wealthy, this whole idea that, you know what, conditions just aren't bad enough here. We're not exploiting enough people. And it leaves me shaking my head because, you know, I know so many people who are working their behinds off. Working every day trying to make ends meet. Working every day trying to just to stay on the treadmill. And I think to these, you know, to the people we've talked about tonight, you know, the scabs that are replacing the workers at Hoffman who got kicked to the curb. You know, those people didn't want to be put in that situation. They were just looking for a job. And I've heard people say, well, you know, they're not scabs, Rick. Yeah, they are. I mean, I look at this and I go, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not crossing a picket line. Because I understand, fundamentally, I understand that by me doing that, I'm not only harming that person on that line, I'm harming myself. And the same thing with these J1 students over this McDonald's over on Trindle Road. Same thing. Not only am I, and you know, there are Americans that work in those jobs. By allowing, and this is what just blows my mind, by allowing those students to be exploited, you yourself are tearing down your conditions. Do we not get that on a fundamental level? Do we not see what's painfully apparent right before our very eyes? That's the struggle I have in all this. It leaves me scratching my head on so many levels. Anyway, if you've missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. If you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. Stitcher, take the program on the go. As always, you can email me, contact me anytime, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do enjoy at least a thoughtful email. If you're going to call me names, well, I like that too. Going to take a quick break. Right back with the third hour of the program. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Bills to raise the minimum wage have been introduced in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says Senator Tom Harkin and Representative George Miller have taken a stand for millions of struggling families by introducing the bills. Henry says anyone with a job should not have to live in poverty. Henry says raising the minimum wage is a good thing for the economy because it puts more money in the pockets of people who will spend it. She called on the Senate and the House to pass the bills raising the minimum wage from the current $7.25 an hour to $10.10 an hour. A sizable chunk of the sequester cuts come from keeping the country safe. Jesse Russell reports.
President Barack Obama has begun reaching out to a new group of Republicans in an effort to fix the drastic cuts that went into effect this week due to the sequester. Senator Susan Collins, Bob Corker, and Rob Portman have been contacted by the president in an effort to break a logjam that's been created by Republican leadership in Congress. Meanwhile, the impact of the cuts are starting to be felt throughout the country. Some of the cuts include $57 million to help reduce health care fraud and abuse, $125 million from wildlife fire management, $928 million from disaster relief, and $633 million from special education programs. Some of the biggest cuts come from areas that ensure the nation's security. Perhaps most strikingly, in light of the controversy surrounding Benghazi, is the $79 million that has been slashed from embassy security around the globe. In addition, the cuts also include $549 million from border protection and $604 million from the National Nuclear Security Administration.
The AFL-CIO and Change to Win labor federations have filed amicus briefs challenging laws that ban gay marriage. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says that we're a nation built on the belief of equality for all, and laws banning marriage equality for gays deny people these fundamental American rights. Weingarten says, as someone who felt the sting of anti-gay prejudice growing up gay, she's proud to be part of a labor movement committed to challenging injustice and discrimination. Weingarten says the U.S. Supreme Court must overturn discriminatory laws against marriage equality. The Flight Attendants Union Coalition today blasted a Transportation Security Administration proposal to allow knives and other objects on board flights that the union calls dangerous. The Flight Attendants Union Coalition says it's a poor and short-sighted decision. As the last line of defense in airplane cabins, the attendants say, they believe the proposed changes would further endanger the lives of flight attendants and passengers. This newscast underwritten in part by the OPEIU and the IBEW.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So the talking filibuster continues. Reading all kinds of tweets and all kind of messages. It's pretty interesting that Rand Paul pretty much read every story on drone research. Well, written by men, as my producer pointed out. None but written by women. I'm kind of surprised at that. Which is why I've asked Marcy Wheeler, one of the folks who has been writing about this extensively, to come talk to us about the John Brennan nomination and this, the talking filibuster. Marcy, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, are you watching this go on?
I watched altogether too much of it, but Ted Cruz has been on for just about an hour now, and that's going to make me leave.
Not a big fan of Tea Party Ted?
You know, I noted an hour ago when he first started, I said, you know, this is such an issue that it almost makes Ted Cruz seem reasonable. I added some potty words in there, too, but and I take it back. That was an hour ago. Now I'm ready. I mean, in the middle of this filibuster purportedly about civil liberties, he started bashing gay marriage, so that's what the filibuster has become.
Well, he is a one-trick pony, so I would not be surprised at that. But in looking at this filibuster, you know, is it that this is an attack on Brennan? Is it this attack on the Obama policy, or is it, you know, the fact that, you know, we really should have a conversation about how drones are being used?
It's not an attack on Brennan, although, you know, I think it should be. After all, he was in many ways the drone architect, the architect of Obama's drone program. I think for Paul, it is at least 75% on the issue of how outrageous it is that a president could kill an American without any due process. I think the Republicans, and I commented on this really two, maybe 3 weeks ago, when Republicans in the House started asking for these memos, and kind of mainstream Bob Goodlatte kind of Republicans. And I said, this is about to turn into a political issue. And if the White House doesn't start becoming more forthcoming on these issues, it's going to become a political issue. And frankly, it is a real issue. Unlike Benghazi, unlike Fast and Furious, unlike everything else they've tried to turn into a real issue. I mean, it is in fact a real issue that the president is killing Americans without any due process.
Yeah.
You know, but now you've got Ted Cruz turning it into his little show to read Patton and Shakespeare and bash gay marriage. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, but here again, I'm a huge fan of the talking filibuster, because then you see who these people really are and what's important to him. I mean, this is, as you pointed out, a very serious issue, and he's taken this off into sideshow land.
Right. And I have to say this for Rand Paul, too, is for... I mean, he didn't quote me, but he quoted many, many really good pieces on drones all the way through primetime. And, you know, I think there's been 10, 11 senators who've at least given him a break, in addition to Cruz, Barrasso, Ron Wyden was out there as the only Democrat, a number of other Republicans, but, Paul got a lot of substantive stuff in on this filibuster, and if nothing else, it's going to raise attention to some of the issues and some of the questions that we should be asking about it. And so, to that degree, I think it's being effective. One of the most interesting things, there was actually a little teeny bit of news snuck in around 7 o'clock where Paul tried to get, I think he wanted to quit, and he tried to get Democrats to agree to vote for or vote on a non-binding resolution saying the president can't use lethal force against non-combatant Americans in the United States. Non-binding, so, you know, they can vote on it, say they support the idea. And Dick Durbin got up and said, we're not going to vote on it. And so, that's actually really telling today because in Eric Holder's hearing earlier today, Chuck Grassley said, you know, what if we pass a law that says you can't use drone strikes on Americans in the United States? And Holder said, you know, I think that's probably unconstitutional. And that's pretty outrageous.
That is outrageous.
That Congress can't put any limits on the use of lethal force.
It's an interesting position to take, and it's one that I would have expected from the Bush administration.
Precisely. I mean, there were a couple of things. I mean, frankly, there have always been those hints in what the Obama administration has been saying, and they've tried to kind of split the baby to appear to be really embracing civil liberties and all the things Obama's image, but at the same time to also guard presidential power. And I think Holder's appearance today, there were a couple of other, you know, for example, Lindsey Graham said, well, there's no exception to the United States in the AUMF, and Holder said, well, no, of course there isn't. And in fact, Tom Daschle, Zoe Lofgren last week brought this up. The Democrats insisted that the United States be taken out of the AUMF in 2001, and yet the Obama administration is on the record saying that they believe that the AUMF extends to the United States. So we're in the war zone, and that's what the Obama administration said on the record in a hearing today.
Interesting, because you know I look at this and you don't want to handcuff anyone, but I got to be honest, I don't know that I want to. I want all these drones all over the place without anyone. Without any real oversight.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of issues here. One is the overseas drone program, which is a tactic in search of a strategy, and several years beyond the point where it should have had a strategy, because it's not clear that it's really helping us. Another one is the question of when the president should be able to use lethal force. I mean, one of the other interesting things that's come out in this debate is that the administration won't even give the Senate Intelligence Committee a list of all the countries they've used lethal force, which is
now that's an issue. I mean, that's an actual and absolute issue that I think is nonpartisan. That I don't want any president to have that or any administration to be able to get away with that. I think someone should know, maybe not splashed all over the front page of every newspaper, but at least some oversight body having that information.
Right, and that's what the intelligence committees are supposed to be there for, and yet the administration is refusing to give that information. And so, and then there's the question of domestically, do we want drones running around in the same airspace in JFK where we've got jets flying? No, we don't want that either. So there's a bunch of issues, and what Paul is primarily focusing on is the possibility of using drones, and he's not just talking about drones. Against Americans, he's brought up signature strikes, which is another big issue. He's brought up the efficacy of drones in the larger war. So he's brought up a lot. But, you know, I think it is important to focus some attention on this because there's so many questions that are part of it, some of which have to do with drones, some of which have to do with foreign policy, some of which have to do with the FAA, and we're not really debating any of them.
So do you think that this is going to help push that along, or will it be seen as just a sideshow, a circus, something, because it's Rand Paul doing it, is it something that could be brushed aside?
Well, you know, if Ted Cruz will get off the TV, then I think
it's got a chance.
Paul was saying some really important things, and Paul was was reading from Glenn Greenwald to Human Events to National Review. You know, so Paul was presenting a pretty wide range of opinions, most of people saying that we have a constitution and it imposes certain limits on the president. So long as it's about that issue, I mean, I don't know. You know, filibusters end up going to the phone book, and apparently Ted Cruz is the phone book.
Yeah. Because at some point, will there be a hearing on this? I mean, is there any push towards, you know, hearings or any of that stuff?
Well, in an attempt to shut up Paul, Durbin said that he would hold a hearing, partly because he wants to find out whether it's constitutional to actually put any limits on the president. There was actually a hearing in the House Judiciary by Republicans last week, and Bob Goodlatte is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee right now. It was a very respectable hearing, and this is when I really, you know, began to say the administration is going to get itself in trouble because they're not taking this seriously. Goodlatte asked DOJ to send somebody to that hearing, and it's perfectly within the jurisdiction of DOJ to ask for somebody from HJC to ask for somebody from DOJ, and they didn't send anyone. And I think that was a moment where Republicans really got the taste of this becoming a political issue.
Yeah, because this could be, and again, even if there is no there, the appearance that there's something there by stonewalling would give something that give it even bigger legs than it would have otherwise.
Yeah, and you know there are. I think part of what's going on is that there are still these extant FOIAs, and for a variety of reasons, the administration doesn't want to have to lose a FOIA against the ACLU. So they're being stupid because the ACLU has become the great white whale for them. But there's also a wrongful death suit by Anwar al-Awlaki, who's the American who was targeted, his son, who was also he got killed 2 weeks later, and then Samir Khan, who was a propagandist, who got killed in the al-Awlaki strike. And so there is an active lawsuit about these issues.
Right.
So
let me ask you this then, because, you know, I've talked to a number of people who say, you know, if you're over wherever, in Afghanistan or Iraq or any of these places Pakistan or anywhere where you're actively working against our interests and yet you are a citizen, is it feasible? Is it right? Is it constitutional to then go after them based on the fact that they're working in concert with the enemy? And so I'm curious what your thoughts on that is.
Well, you know, I think if Anwar al-Awlaki was on a traditional battlefield with a gun in hand and was shot by the military, I think that's pretty solidly within the rule of law, within the law of war. And the problem is we're so far from that. They first targeted al-Awlaki at a time when even the intelligence community says they didn't believe he was operational. So they thought he was just a propagandist, and they still tried to kill him. And then, you know, it was something like 20 months later before they actually killed him. So the notion that he was an imminent threat for that entire period really blows the notion of imminence out of the water. And the administration has said that they're not using imminent in terms of you're going to attack me tomorrow. They're using imminent in terms of, well, you might attack me in the future, and therefore you're an imminent threat. And so that's the problem. Once you stretch it out that far, then you have this opportunity to have due process. And frankly, the judge in the FOIA, one of the ACLU FOIA cases, said, you know, treason is in the Constitution, and it's actually on Article 3. It's in the judiciary branch, and it is a role enumerated in the Constitution for the judiciary to decide whether an American citizen has turned on his country or not, and such and so forth can be killed. And so, that's something that Paul has said, that we have treason, and that's what al-Awlaki probably was a traitor. But instead of dealing with him in those terms, and, you know, there probably was enough evidence to call him a traitor, they instead, you know, took a drone strike after having announced they were going to do so 20 months before. And that's, I think, where you get into the problem. And I also think to get to where you can drone strike al-Awlaki, you have to make a series of claims which, while they may not apply them to other people, are really stretches in and among themselves. But I think what, you know, the problem is everyone's saying, well, Lockheed was a terrible person, and so I'm okay with him being killed.
Right.
And I get that. But the problem was that the legal basis to do so for him was so
flimsy,
stretched, that I think it became a problem because it creates this precedent for, you know, President Evil Person coming in the future to start killing people in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and that's my concern in all of this. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, well, he's just a bad guy and we're better off without him. But, you know, where does it end?
Right, and one of the things I pointed out is that, you know, we talk about drone strikes, but really this is about targeted killing. It's not about you're only using drones. And we see, you know, the FBI, Border Patrol, we see law enforcement in this country kill people all the time. And I started thinking about it. It's like, how would you know if that person was targeted killed?
Yeah.
You know, and I looked at a case here in Michigan where a guy who really fits the description they used of Al-Laki very closely. He was a cleric. He was training to attack the United States, they claimed. He, you know, hated the United States. He had turned on the United States, and they went to arrest him, picked a dog on him. When he went to protect himself from the dog, they shot him 21 times. And it's like, I'm not saying that was a targeted killing, but I'm saying, how would you know?
Yeah, but you're not saying it wasn't either.
I'm saying there's no reason to think it wasn't. It was another one of these cases where law enforcement uses probably excessive force in the name of arresting somebody and ends up killing somebody. In this case, he just so happened to have precisely the kind of profile that the administration says they can kill.
Yeah, and the thing is I don't want any president to have that kind of judge, jury, executioner power. I do think there's a process, and I liked the checks and balance caucus idea that Wyden threw out there. It is the basis of our country, after all, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think anybody's saying there's never a time. I mean, some people are, but most people aren't saying there's never a time when you can kill an American if you're on the battlefield, if it's genuinely a hot pursuit. There's definitely precedence for it, even in the United States. I think the issue is when you've got this, you know, time period and you've got this real stretch between the claim of imminent threat and the threat itself, then really that's when you need to have somebody else come in and provide due process.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Do you think the Brennan nomination is going to go through?
Oh, it will. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how this is kind of disintegrated into a team tag team filibuster at this point, and I don't know how long they're going to go through, but I can't imagine. I think by Friday, Brennan will be confirmed.
All right. Well, we'll see where that goes, and if this turns into a hearing, and where this ends up. And we'd love to have you back again as this continues.
Be happy to. Yeah.
All right, Marcy. I appreciate the time, Marcy Wheeler. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
One of these days we're gonna wake up.
Changing America for the better.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Well now, here's some unexpected news. It comes from what purports to be an official document of the National Republican Party. And wow, the policy positions it contains show that the party leaders really are serious about coming to their senses and rejecting the plutocratic extremism and far-right wackiness that has stained their recent presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial campaigns. Right at the top, this 18-page manifesto proclaims that, quote, our government was created by the people for all the people, and it must serve no less a purpose. All the people. Forget last year's ridiculous pontifications by Mitt Romney and others, dividing America into virtuous creators, like themselves, and worthless moochers, like you and me. This document abounds with commitments to the common good. Quote, America does not prosper, it proudly proclaims on page 3, unless all Americans prosper. Shazam, that's downright democratic. And how's this for a complete turnaround? Labor is the United States. The men and women who, with their minds, their hearts, and hands, create the wealth that is shared in this country, they are America. Holy Koch brothers, share the wealth? Yes, and how about this? The protection of the right of workers to organize into unions and to bargain collectively is the firm and permanent policy of the Republican Party. Eat your heart out, Scott Walker, and you other labor-bashing GOP governors. The document also supports the Postal Service, the United Nations, equal rights for women, expanding our national parks, vigorous enforcement of antitrust laws, and raising the minimum wage. New enlightenment in the Grand Old Party. Hallelujah! This is Jim Hightower saying, can all this be true? Yes, except it's not new. This document is the Republican Party platform of 1956.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, yay, more fun with guns. You gotta love Georgia. Georgia, the city councilman in a city called Nelson, his name is Dwayne Chronic. He has proposed that every citizen within the little city be mandated. Not a suggestion, mandated to buy a gun. He says, you know, it's a deterrent ordinance. He says, tells potential intruders, you better think twice. And I think about this and I go, you know, I'm sure that the right wing is not happy with having to buy anything because didn't we just have a whole healthcare thing over people buying, never mind. There's also another, Kenosha, Georgia, they have a similar mandate, but it's not enforced. I would assume as soon as they went to enforce that, someone would take it to court and it'd be ruled unconstitutional. And all around the country, you've got people who are saying, well, we need to arm everybody, and because there's this, and again, you get into this right-wing world where they say it's true, and then they prove that it's true based on their own research, or whatever you want to call it. Research, not so much. But they make their point true based on what they make up. And they're saying, well, more guns is better. Except the study from Harvard, and I think I would trust Harvard more than, you know, the Gun Institute. They say that they make a pretty strong case for your people who have more guns die more. Just seems rational to me. And I go back to when I was a kid. You know, the people that had guns, they had guns for a reason, to shoot people. It was kind of a different environment. Yesterday, in Los Angeles, as folks were going to the polls, one of the poll workers shot 3 times by what was reported to be his girlfriend at the time. So, hey, having a gun accessible helped him out an awful lot. And a 61-year-old woman went to Walmart in Florida, not happy with the person behind the counter who wouldn't take a dollar off coupon. Well, pulled a gun. Pointed a gun at the clerk over a dollar coupon. I mean, how bad has it gotten? Pretty bad. And you look at Lou Dobbs, and I love the right wing. I love Lou. I think he's as crazy as a loon, but I love him anyway. He was talking the other day with Wayne LaPierre, the head of the NRA, which a great story about LaPierre. Evidently, and this was a couple weeks ago that this came out, I think it was Rolling Stone that had an article on it. Evidently, he's not a gun guy. You know, with Charlton Heston, you know, he was, you know, some rumor was he was actually sleeping with guns. But this guy, not so much. In fact, what they say is he's a dangerous guy to have a gun in his hand. And the story was is that evidently they went to, you know, take some pictures of him holding guns and, you know, do some video. And evidently someone said, you know, Wayne, look over here. And he turned around, pointed the gun right at the guy with the camera without pointing it downward. Evidently the guy's an absolute disgrace with the gun. But the staff jokes that if they screw up, they're going to have to go out hunting with him because he could be the next Dick Cheney. Interesting story about Cheney. Someone told me that, and the theory is, and I buy it. I think he's probably right. It wasn't that he was drunk, because he was probably looped most of the time when he shot the guy in the face. He's probably there with his mistress. That's the latest story I've heard. That's probably quite true. Who knows? But anyway, LaPierre was on with Lou Dobbs, Fox Business, because you know, business and guns won't go right together. So you got Dobbs out there who had a really just an amazing statement. I just wanted to play that because it just, listen to this.
At the same time, we're watching inexplicably, without any voice from the Department of Homeland Security, we are watching, you know, another purchase of 7,000 AR-15 like rifles. We are watching 2 billion rounds of ammunition, principally 40 and 9 millimeter. We are looking at the purchase of 2,700 light armored vehicles in the midst of, at least allegedly, 2,700 of those vehicles. What in the world is going on as the Homeland Department, the Department of Homeland Security seems to be arming up and the administration's trying to disarm American citizens?
Well, one, I don't see them disarming anyone. But I love, you know, Border Lou, who, remember, he build the fence, militarize it, you know, the whole border thing, complaining that the Department of Homeland Security is buying weapons to militarize the border. I find that absolutely hysterical. And, you know, evidently stole this story of all of these weapons being bought from Alex Jones and his InfoWars. You know, because according to Alex Jones, the military's the country's always gearing up against us. And they go, well, wait a second, they are. They are gearing up all the time because we're a warlike nation. So when they buy all this stuff and supply the military and do all those things, somehow that's they're going to use it against us. Let me let Lou in on a little secret. And Alex Jones. I mean, it's pretty simple. We've lost the arms race. I don't have a howitzer. I don't have a tank. I don't have a stealth bomber. I don't have any of that stuff. I'm not quite sure how an AR-15 is going to help me against our army. I'm just confused at this on so many levels. And I look at Lindsey Graham, who I guess, you know, had his view that when chaos ensues, you know, you need to have your semi-automatic weapon handy. And he points to what happened in New Orleans. And, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe when those cops were shooting people on the bridge, maybe them having guns would have made it justified. But it wasn't. I mean, when times of, and he even said that, you know, other times when gangs of hoodlums are in New York after Sandy. And I'm going, I'm sorry, did I miss that? In times of crisis, people come together to help one another out for the most part. And those people who were breaking into stores or looting, as we were told, they were trying to figure out how to feed themselves because they had been walked away from. But I guess it's all in who controls our media structure. Now, Do I agree with Lou that maybe we should be looking at what the police departments around this country are doing? I've been concerned over the years at all of the innovations, thanks to what's going on in Iraq, coming back here. The sound cannons, the shock cuffs, the goodbye gun. Evidently, they shoot you with this radio frequency that makes you feel like you're on fire. They got another one that makes you want to throw up. They have gotten so many really great crowd control toys. It's amazing. And you didn't think that they were just going to use them there. No. What we've got is, and this is one of those things, if you would have looked at the Occupy thing in New York, the cops lining up in their riot gear, I mean, these look like shock troopers. And the ACLU has filed over, what, 255 open records requests saying, hey, we want to know from September 11th on what's been going on. You know, it's no longer your local cop, no longer, you know, Mayberry. It's no longer Andy Griffin. It's more like G.I. Joe. And the more I see things like that happen today, the more I think back to labor's history. And I think back to the militia being called out, and the police being called out to shoot workers in the back, or like in Detroit when the newspapers were on strike back in the 90s, where the cops are out there beating workers in the streets. They're to protect and serve us. And yet, too often, what we see, and in both of the incidents today, both of the opportunities for workers to get out, the police were there. As more of, in my view, an intimidating presence than a protect and serve presence. And I guess, you know, I'm worried the direction we're going. And you look at, you know, the more you look at this, the more it worries me. Because I look back to labor's history and all of the advancements and all of the fights and all of that created that middle class. Is that possible again? Not sure. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Luke Vargas from Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this.
America. Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us.
Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
All right, you gotta love the fact that the Dauphin County Prison here locally on lockdown until Tuesday. And almost an entire week of lockdown. Why? Well, one of the prisoners in the county prison thought it would be a great idea to break off a piece of their metal tray and start digging their way to freedom. I guess he scratched a little bit of the concrete and they thought, I better put everyone on lockdown. I'm sure he's going to be very popular next Wednesday. An entire week in locked, not good. What a dub. Well, there is a reason he's in jail, and probably a pretty good one. Anyway, here to talk to us about what's going on around the world, I've got Luke Vargas, Talk Radio News Service. Luke, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, of course. Good to talk to you.
So the, what is it, the Checks and Balance Caucus holding the floor in the Senate today, huh?
That's right. So we're nearing the nine-hour mark for Senator Rand Paul's verbal filibuster on the floor of the Senate. And I have to say, it feels strangely admirable to watch this guy out there always complaining about having a dry voice as he goes from hour to hour. A few minutes ago, Mark Kirk, the senator, came up and delivered an apple and a thermos to Rand Paul so he could stay hydrated and not to succumb to the elements as he sits there in the Senate chamber and filibusters.
Look, I'm all in favor of talking filibusters, wishes this is what we would have. This is how you do it. I don't want to see him secretly through, you know, through a little backroom deal, say we're gonna hold this up. Get out there, tell me why. And I got to be honest, I'm not against the idea of knowing if we're going to use drones to kill people like me or if we're going to use drones to spy on us. I've got a whole bunch of problems, and I agree with the ACLU. I want to know what our police state military or police departments are doing.
You're right. We've got the ACLU. We've got Amnesty International also coming on and saying they support Rand Paul. We've got Marco Rubio, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, all of those Republican senators. But then Ron Wyden, our Democrat from Oregon, who is really lambasting Lenin in his CIA nomination hearings the other day. So this has become a bipartisan event, which is something that I think, a few people aren't willing to acknowledge quite yet.
So in your opinion, is this, Brennan's just the lightning rod that's getting beat up over the policy, or is it because he was integral in coming up with it?
Well, he can't be taken out of the picture, but I do think it's the policy that's being targeted. And this specific filibuster seems to be a response to Eric Holder's comments yesterday, saying essentially what we all suspected all along, which was that the administration had their sights on extending their power far enough in this case of drones to be able to attack Americans on American soil. And we got some surprising confirmation of that yesterday.
Now, is that, you know, because I had a conversation with a couple of friends about this, and you know, some of my very conservative friends say, well, you know, we shouldn't be allowed to know all the things that they're doing, and I'm going, well, I gotta be honest, I want somebody to know, I want there to be some oversight, I want there to be some transparency, so that you can't just go, well, you know, we're just gonna deal with this quietly over here. I want somebody paying attention.
I have to say, I think I've heard some people today saying that Rand Paul is doing this only to get in the public consciousness of
sure
the presidential run. And there's certainly an element of that going on here. But I have to say, as I listen to more and more of what he's saying, and I hear, you know, how many people really are frustrated about this and the fact this is bipartisan, and it brings in groups like the ACLU and Amnesty who we never hear about written in the same sentence as Marco Rubio and Rand Paul,
right,
typically. I think it does give this issue a little bit more credibility. It deserves everyone's second look, even if they've already made up their minds on this. This is a big policy move, and I think it deserves the fact that it's staying around in the public consciousness a little bit longer before disappearing into the darkness of the federal government again.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of it, to be honest. In fact, but I'm a big fan of the talking filibuster. I kind of think that's the way it should be.
Sure, sure.
The day after Chavez, what's the world reaction on Hugo's passing? Where's Venezuela going? What's the direction? Do the mainstream thinkers think it's going to go?
Well, I think so many people before Chavez died were excited, thinking all these rosy thoughts that perhaps with Chavez out, we could bring in someone who was more of a fan of the United States, to put it one way, And as we're starting to get a better sense of what's going on, it looks like his possible successor in the government's candidate in the upcoming elections is going to be similarly anti-United States. His name is Nicolas Maduro. He's another former union leader in Venezuela, a bus driver, and he was the one that hours before Hugo Chavez's death came on the state television and accused the imperialist country of the United States for poisoning Mr. Chavez with cancer. And he looks like he's kind of a clone, policy-wise, rhetoric-wise, of Hugo Chavez. So certainly a chance that in Chavez's absence, we're not going to see too big of a change from Venezuela. But it's worth noting that just last year in the presidential election, a very different type of opposition leader got 45% of the vote. So we may have a government candidate again here, and we may have a population that is mourning their current leader, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to replace him with an exact copy or a parrot, as he's called.
Well, I mean, at the end of it, you know, some of the things that he did, I was in favor of. A lot of it, I was not. And especially the rhetoric and the constantly putting the thumb in the eye of the U.S. I don't think that's productive.
Well, the main thing it looks like we'll see a change of policy in is what we call petrodiplomacy, which is something that's kind of unique to Venezuela. They've got so much oil, the world's largest oil reserve.
Yeah.
And they've been able to pick their friends, sort of fellow socialists and leftist governments around South and Central America, and they give them super cheap oil. They don't really even sell for a profit in order to prop up politically similar countries. And there's a good chance that a country that's having industrial problems and a shortage of infrastructural investments, their leaders might think twice about cutting out so many special deals for countries like Cuba. And that might be where we see the real impact of this.
Yeah, because I heard on the radio today, I think it was one of the right-wing blowhards going, and there's controversy or there's argument that, that Venezuela is sitting on all this oil, and I'm going, controversy? I think everybody knew that they had a huge oil reserve, and one of the reasons that we're really ticked at Chavez is that he nationalized the oil and said, we're going to use it for our needs and screw you, big multinationals.
Sure. This is something you've seen played out from leaders all over the place. I think last week we were talking about Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia.
Yep.
He flew in for the funeral today and apparently walked next to the casket for 6 hours. So you might have people criticizing the policy of Venezuela here in the United States, but across South America, there are a number of countries there that really admire him for what he's done. And in his absence, there is a very strong and solidified pathway that other countries are going to look to walk on. That's his lasting legacy. It's a big legacy.
Yeah, well, we'll see where this goes. I see that there are going to be some sanctions on North Korea. The worm comes back from North Korea and now sanctions.
The greatest thing, after Dennis Rodman's return from North Korea, and I forget who it was, he may have been unnamed, it was a guy at the CIA who said, isn't it frightening that the person who knows most about the inner thoughts and workings and the habits of Kim Jong-un is Dennis Rodman, and isn't that a scary thing about how much intelligence we have on North Koreans? We are getting a new round of sanctions tomorrow at the UN, it looks like. The big thing that they're not going to be targeting in these sanctions is the trade of small arms. I was surprised in doing research for a story this week to find that North Korea has the third most weapons of any country in the world. This is behind China and the United States. They've got about half as many guns as China does, which should just, blow all of our minds. And these sanctions, we had sort of hoped that maybe in a month where we're looking to do a global arms trade treaty, that maybe we'd pick North Korea as a good place to start. Stop giving their massive standing army hundreds of thousands of weapons a month whenever they want them from Iran or other countries that they trade with. But it looks like those are not going to be a part of the sanctions tomorrow, unfortunately.
But is it a case of it's just something we're not going to be able to enforce?
It may be that, though. In original draft sanctions that were sort of circulated and talked about by countries other than the United States and China, who were the people who unveiled these sanctions, there was talk of international mechanisms to be able to monitor the arms trade. And this is something the international community is very confident that if it wanted to, it could enforce in North Korea. It's just something that the U.S. and China couldn't muster the political strength to try to implement.
Interesting. And it is kind of scary that Dennis Rodman, of all people, has the most information on what's going on there. And they're friends.
Sure, you saw those pictures of them hamming it up courtside. I don't even know what basketball court they were at, but they were apparently watching a basketball game.
The Harlem Globetrotters.
They took
They took some of the Harlem Globetrotters to put on a little show for the whatever he is.
But you're right. It does say something a little bit frightening about our how much we know about him, that Dennis Rodman has such a special position in the intelligence community now.
Jeez. Well, I mean, there are some people who claim he's an alien. I think it's him who claims that, but that's a whole other story. Let's move around the international community. Kenya, something interesting going on in the president's home country?
Of course. Well, actually, on that topic, Obama's half-brother is running for a governorship in Kenya, so they're certainly not trying to bury that history at all. But there was... Go ahead.
I wouldn't.
No, that's a very interesting legacy for sure.
Put me in control because I know the guy who's got the button.
Right. I would have to say he would instantly rise to being one of the most prominent governors in Kenya if he were to win that election. I don't think results are in. But to briefly talk about the results of the presidential election, it looks like we're going to have a new president whose last name is Kenyatta. So we have the Kenyan president, Kenyatta, who unfortunately is being tried in the International Criminal Court in The Hague for crimes against humanity. So that's a very tough slogan to inherit, taking over the presidency in that country.
I wonder if that would fit on the bumper sticker. But, on the Obama front, will Obama go back and stump for his half-brother?
No, the election has already happened, so that window has come and gone.
Oh, well. But you know what I love? I still love that there are people, and I guess it shows how conspiratorial we've allowed so many people to become and how the mainstream media actually picks up on some of this stuff, that there are folks who still think he was born there and there was this big nefarious plot of bringing this child to the U.S. and forging all this stuff because they knew this half-black man was going to be president back in the 70s. They knew.
Right. Well, I've covered presidential politics long enough to know that there are a number of senators and governors and people who come from incredible families who all think their name is on the presidency, and they do none of that work in advance.
Yeah.
So it just seems so improbable that any of that could really be the case.
The latest one I've been seeing, I've seen it come around a couple of times, is, the missing 13th Amendment. Have you seen this one? That's the missing. It's the missing 13. It was supposed to be the original one, and they let it go away because lawyers wanted to become politicians. And it basically says nobility can't hold office, and if you belong to like the bar association or something, the idea is you can't be hold elected office. And of course, the 13th Amendment is the one that did away with slavery. So there's that whole racist element saying, well, the 13th Amendment was already there, so. We can bring back slavery, and I've gotten it like 20 times here in the last couple of days because one of the legislators up in New Hampshire decided that he was going to take it on as his cause, and I just it just makes me chuckle at how easily misled we can be if you just put in that the government's coming after you or the government screwed something up. It's just brilliant to me.
Well, New Hampshire's got one of the most open legislatures in the country. So if you've got a crazy position like that, it's not gonna hold you back from office. And that's probably why we're hearing about it.
Yeah. Well, you gotta like it. And lastly, did you see the report on what's going on in Iraq? The special inspector general for Iraq's reconstruction.
I didn't. I'm embarrassed to say it did not cross my desk today.
Surprise, surprise. We wasted money.
No way. I know we've been very efficient about building prisons there on the cheap and things like that.
Yeah, we wasted a bunch of money. In fact, there's a couple billion dollars they can't account for. They wasted money on pipes and all kind of stuff. And they were overcharged for a ton of stuff. And you go, wow, big surprise. I kind of knew that 5 to 10 years ago.
Right, and we've seen the exact same thing in Afghanistan. It's a very common theme, unfortunately.
I just wish the people who were so hell-bent on taking food out of the mouths of children in this country would have spent a little time back then and saying, hey, let's scrutinize where that money's going. Oh, but wait a minute. That money went to private contractors. Yeah, okay, I get it now. Screw those kids. We got contractors to feed.
Well, all I can say is that we've got a new drone base getting constructed in North Africa, and it looks like, and the preliminary sketches for what this base is going to look like, there are not too many opportunities for private contractors to come in and build massive facilities around it and rack up unnecessary expenses. But maybe that's just to come in the years ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on the way. Luke, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
You as well. Take care.
Luke Vargas, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
In a beehive, there's usually just one queen. What happens when the queen dies? Can she be replaced?
When a bee colony loses a queen, say she's accidentally killed, the worker bees notice the absence of a chemical the queen produces, a pheromone. In response to the absence of the queen's scent, the workers begin a process of emergency queen rearing. They start building queen-size rearing chambers for about 10 to 20 young female larvae.
That same process happens if the queen is dying of old age. As she ages, the queen produces fewer pheromones. The decline in pheromone concentration signals to the workers to start building queen-sized cells in the hive. The queen herself lays the eggs of her potential bee princesses into these cells.
Ordinarily, these eggs would hatch into female larvae who would grow up as workers. But since they're inside special, larger, vertically oriented cells, the workers know to feed these bee princesses a special food called royal jelly. This diet creates a fertile queen rather than a sterile worker.
The first queen to emerge from her cell as an adult will sting the other developing queens to death in their cells before they hatch. If two should emerge at the same time, then the rival queens will have a battle to the death. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for Queen Bee.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at EarthSky.org.
I think he did. Alvin Lee, probably one of the nicest guys that I ever met, working at the Cleveland Agora when I was a younger man, doing the bouncing thing when I was younger and in a lot better shape. Probably one of the nicest guys I ever met, a musician, guitarist for 10 years after. That was one of the songs they had back in the 60s. Passed away, I guess, today at the age of 68. Early reports, just a routine operation. They don't know what it is. Some complication from something that they say was routine. And he passed away from complications. But like I said, one of the nicest people I met, doing the music thing. He will be missed. Anyway, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. If you've missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go. You know, I look at, the things we've been talking about today, and I can't get it out of my head how broken our labor law in this country is. I can't get it out of my head. That woman's going to stick with me. It's just going to be one of those moments where I'm just furious for days and weeks over someone just looking at you going, I really don't care. I don't care what their problem is. Because I don't think that's who we are. At least that's not how I was brought up. That's not how I was taught to think. When there's injustice in the world, I truly believe we're the people who change that. We're the people who say, you know what, we're gonna do better for the next generation. And what these kids, these J1 students are doing, I mean, is in that spirit. Okay, they got screwed. They're just not gonna suck it up and move on. They're gonna change it to the person behind them. That doesn't happen to them. And that is so, I mean, if they've, and I was thinking about this during a break a couple breaks ago. You know, that is, you know, of what they came here to seek, that cultural exchange, that cultural experience. If that's what they take back with them, the fact that they can change the world, the fact that they can, by standing together, fighting together, that they can change the future, not only of our country, but of this globe, that'll have been an incredible life lesson, I think. What do you think about it? I mean, because at the end of this, what they take back to their country, what they take back with them, is a reflection on us. And I know we love to, you know, puff out our chest and say how wonderful we are. We're number one. But you look at what's going on, you kind of got to wonder. And you look at the Bush years and all the damage that has been done to our image around the world. It's just a thought. And I saw this special report just out by the Special Inspector General for Iraq's Reconstruction, a guy named Stuart Bowen. And he comes out with a conclusion, no real smart, no genius needed here. But his conclusion was pretty clear. Since the invasion almost 10 years ago, we've spent too much money and had too little return. To date, they claim, the U.S. has spent more than $60 billion on reconstruction. That's to help fix the stuff we've blown up. In Afghanistan, we've spent about $90 billion. Overall, just in Iraq, between making the big rocks small and then trying to put them back together, we've spent, according to this report, $767 billion. Billion with a B. And you go and you look at some of the things that we've done. You remember how many people remember the prison or the police academy that they built that had raw sewage coming out of the ceiling? Tens of millions of dollars there. How many people remember the prison? They built this massive prison, and then they abandoned it. and basically then it was overrun by the insurgents. You think of all of these projects that we did halfway, and you look at the money that was spent on these contractors, the Halliburtons of the world, who made billions. And you go, exactly what are we doing? Well, we're throwing money down a rat hole. And yet we want, and I wish the right wing would spend a little time being as judicious with those dollars as they are with saying that they're doing other stuff. Again, TheRickSmithShow.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the surface.